سورة الفاتحة. حسب الله نحو نعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أبا عبد الله الإمام الحسين عليه الصلاة والسلام، in his historical statement of describing his movement and his stand, said, إِنَّمَا خَرَجْتُ لِطَلَبِ الْإِصْلَاحِ فِي أُمَّةِ جَدِّي وَأُرِيدُ أَنْ أَمُرَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَأَنْهَى عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ وَأَسِيرُ بِسِيرَةِ جَدِّي وَأَبِي عَلِي ابْنِ أَبِي طَالِبٍ. He said, I'm leaving for Islah. That's what I'm going to do. How am I going to do it? The details of it are in the sentence, Asiro besirate jaddi wa abi, that I will do it on the method of my grandfather and my father. That's how I'm going to practice. That's what I'm going to practice. That's what I'm going to do. And this statement of Imam Hussein alayhi salam is pointing us towards the seerat of the Prophet, towards the practice and the way of life of Rasulullah. That's what it is emphasizing, that's what it is stressing. Now obviously, it is obvious for us, when we look at Imam Hussein, obviously he's going to do what the Prophet did. He's going to do what his father Imam Ali did. Is he going to act any way differently than the Prophet and the Imams? Is he going to choose a different path than the Prophet and the Imams? Of course not. In our ideology and our belief, we believe that kulluhum nurun wahid, that all of them are one light. They all learn from the same source, they all feed from the same source, and they all have the same practice. But the other people don't know this. The other Muslims don't know this. I mean, we believe this, right? Because we are Shia, we believe that all the Imams are the same. If Imam Hussein was in the place of Imam Ali, he would have done the same as Imam Ali did. If Imam Ali was in the place of Imam Hussein, he would have done the same thing as Imam Hussein did. That is obviously what we believe in, and we understood that. That is our ideology, right? That is our ideology. But other Muslims, they don't know that. They don't understand Imams that way. In fact, the Shias also did not understand the Imams that way. So when you see the Shias at the time of Imam Hassan and Imam Hussein, they would go to Imam Hassan, they would ask him to do something. If Imam Hassan would not agree, they would go to Imam Hussein and see if he would do it, thinking that Imam Hussein would be different than Imam Hassan. Right? I mean, nowadays you see the same thing that people do with mujtahid and ulama. Is music halal? Then they ask the next one, is music allowed? They are waiting for someone to say yes. Right? They thought the Imams are the same way. They thought that everyone was acting according to his own judgment, according to his own standard, criteria, and everyone has a different opinion. That's what they thought of the Imams. Even the Shias at that time, I'm saying. So, when Imam Hussein mentioned this statement, it was making it clear that my movement, my stand, my method, my practice will not be different than my grandfather or my father. This is to reassure the people who haven't understood imamat yet, who haven't understood ismat yet, to know that we are all the same. We are all the same. And I'm practicing according to the practice of my grandfather. This itself is showing that the people did not believe that then. You understand that? The people did not believe it then. Imam Hussein rejected this notion and said, no, we are all the same. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Yesterday we mentioned that Imam Hussein, by saying this statement, Asiru bi sirati jaddi wa abi, that I practice according to the practice of my grandfather, by saying this, Imam Hussein declared a peaceful movement, a lenient movement, a movement of leniency and forgiveness, compassion. That's what he declared. Not a movement of uproar and upheaval or turbulence or revolt, commotion, disruption. That's not what he wanted. By saying this, he's saying, listen, what I'm going to do with you, you don't have to be afraid of this. I'm going to be very peaceful. It's going to be a very peaceful movement. It's going to be a very gentle movement. I'm rising up, but this rising up is not out of anger. This rising up is out of care and love. This is what it's about. And by saying this, he also clearly mentioned to his followers, to his Shias, who could understand. You see, a lot of Shias didn't understand this. By saying this, what he was alluding to, and this is something I want you all to understand, and we'll go on from here. He was alluding to this fact here, that listen, by following the path of my father and grandfather, I'm going to put myself in a vulnerable situation. I'm going to put my life at risk. I'm going to put my family at risk. I'm going to have myself surrounded by scumbags and lowlives who will take advantage of my gentleness. I'm going to risk my life, and I'm going to put my life at this place. This is what I'm trying to get across to you by saying, just like the Prophet did it, just like my father did it, I'm going to do the same thing. Are you ready to come forward to defend me? Do you understand what I'm saying? Why did he do that? Why did he make his movement based on this leniency? He could have been harsher, and he could have gotten more people. He could have built a better army, a stronger army, not a better, a bigger army. Mark my words, not a better one, but a bigger one. Could have built it. But why did he not do it? My friends, he said, Asiru bi sirati jaddi. He says, look at the sirat of my grandfather. Every victory that the Prophet has won in his life, every time he won in his life was through his compassion, not through his anger. Every victory of Islam came through compassion and mercy and forgiveness and leniency. Every victory came through that. And you see that this victories of Islam that came through that, this is why I am also traveling on this path. So victory for Islam will be gained through this forgiveness and leniency that I am going to show. This is the seerat of the Prophet. Really? This is the seerat of the Prophet. And this is the reason why the Prophet was called naive. This is the reason why the Prophet was called naive. He's simple-minded. He's everyone's fool. MazAllah. Right? Allah says this in the Quran. He quotes them in the Quran. Right? He says, مِنْهُمُ الَّذِينَ يُؤْذُونَ النَّبِيِّ that there are those people amongst them who they bother the Prophet. They bother him, they vex him, they annoy him. وَيَقُولُونَ هُوَ أُذُنٌ أُذُنٌ. When you read the translation of the Quran in English, it's like, again, those translators don't understand what the meaning of أُذُنٌ is. أُذُن means ear. So they translated it as, he's all hearing. And it's laughable, the translations, you know. He's all hearing, or he hears all. Udhunun is a person who you call a naive person, who listens to anything. Right? That you listen to anything. You know, whatever you say, you know, he'll just listen to it, you know. That's it. This is the opinion of the people of the time of Prophet. When they looked at the Prophet, they say that he is naive. You know, you can say whatever you want, he just listens to you without any problem. And he's simple-minded. He's not smart, he's not cunning, he's not shrewd. He's not a gamer. He doesn't know how to play game. Right? This is what they used to say. And who are these people? Not kuffar, these are Muslims who are talking. These are companions who are talking. Right? These are companions who are talking. And the Prophet in his dealing with Muslims was like that. It wasn't that he was naive. It wasn't that he was simple-minded. No, he knew everything that was going on. But in his interaction with Muslims, he was that clear and transparent. He was that open and loving and gentle. He was like that when he dealt with Muslims. He was like that. He wouldn't be very... He would always try to do what? Try to give the positive view. Do husnul zan. Give the benefit of the doubt. This is the method of the Prophet. This is the seerat of the Prophet. Prophet always wanted positive thinking. He encouraged people to think positively, not negatively. Don't be negative in your thinking. This is the way of the Prophet. That every time you hear someone says, oh, we're going to do this. It won't work out. What do you mean it won't work out? You know, you see some people are negative. It won't happen, you know. It's just ideal. It won't happen. What makes you so sure? The Prophet said, no, don't think like that. Think positively. Say, inshallah, it will happen. Right? It will happen. Friends, you know, there are many things happened in the past in history. In history that... when we look at it, we will, you know, we still can't believe it happened. Because they're so far back in history, we don't know. I mean, you know, we don't feel the effect of it. You know, the fall of the Roman Empire. I mean, no one expected it. No one would believe that the Roman Empire would fall. And they ruled for how many hundreds of years? People had lost hope it will fall. They thought, this is it, the everlasting God. This is it, the everlasting God. Hundreds of years they ruled. And nowadays, superpowers are coming and going in 50 years. A 50-year lifespan nowadays. You know? My friends, how many things have happened that are unbelievable in history? And because they're so far back, we don't feel the effect of it. But now you see, here Rasulullah wants us to understand this. But his method was always, listen, try to be positive. Try to have hope. Try to have hope. And when it comes to dealing with Muslims and mu'min, always have hope. Let me give you one example from the life of the Prophet. Right? Let me give you one example in the life of the Prophet. You know, how far does he go to be positive, to be lenient, to be forgiving? One of the wives of the Prophet, will keep her name unnamed. She came and complained to the Prophet, you're not giving me enough time. He said, you're not giving me enough time. You know. And obviously the Prophet was giving her enough time, she just wanted more. Right? So she complained to the Prophet, you know, that, hey, listen, you know, I need more time from you. Right? You are not giving me enough attention. You're not, you know, showing enough love to me. You know, and the Prophet was doing all of that. But because he wanted more, and that's something that is a sickness. Right? Wanting more than what is there. So when the Prophet, you know, so the Prophet, in order to subdue her, in order to say that, listen, don't worry, right? He said that, listen, don't worry. Soon your dad will rule this people. He said, soon your dad will be in power here. Meaning that, you know, your luck is going to become good now. You're in luck soon. Your lottery ticket is coming out. Right? You're in luck now. He told that to her. And he told her, and when I told you, do not tell this to anyone. He says, give instructions. What I told you, do not tell this to anyone. Not even your father. Not even your friends. So, obviously, when he warned her not to say this, the first thing she did is she went to her friend and said it. Who was the daughter of the other guy? And she was the daughter of the other guy. She told her that, listen, this is what I heard, that my father is going to be in charge soon. That he will be ruling soon. Right? So then what happened is that when she heard that, then after the warning, don't tell their fathers, they went to their fathers and told them. And said that, listen, this is what we heard from the Prophet, that he said that you are going to be in charge. And you'll be this. Now, because those two were already pre-planning to take over, their guilty conscience said that, hey, our plan is exposed. He knows about what we are doing. You see, they thought that, listen, he knows the future. They're not thinking about that. You know, obviously he's speaking from ilm al-ghaib, that he knows what's going to happen, that these people will be in charge. That is a fact of history. He knows the future. This is it. They're not thinking like that. They're thinking he knows about us. He knows what we are up to. Right? You know what we are up to, right? So then what happened is that these two, because they thought that they were exposed and they didn't want to be exposed in front of others, they made a plan to assassinate the Prophet. They made a plan to assassinate the Prophet, and the plan was made on the way to Tabuk, the war of Tabuk. And when this plan was made on the way to Tabuk, Allah informed the Prophet of their plan through Jibreel. Prophet knew about this. He increased his guards, his security around him. The plan was foiled, and they were exposed to the Prophet. The people, obviously, this is someone who's trying to assassinate your leader, right? They are trying to take over and do a coup. Right? They are obviously doing every crime in the book that you can do against any government. Right? So now the people who believe in that government, the Muslims, have the right to know these people so that they can bring them and make them face their crime. They have the right to do that. They came to the Prophet and said, Ya Rasulullah, tell us their names. Tell us who they are so we can bring them to justice. These people who have planned this out for you. These people who have done this thing to you. And against the Muslims. Against the will of the Muslims. Who are these people who did this? Let us know. But the Prophet, till the end of his life, never exposed them. He says, no, I do not want to expose them. I don't want to take their names. I don't want to bring them out. I don't want to put them down. My friends, understand this. The seerat of Rasulullah, what it is. How far do you go in forgiveness? How far do you go? Such people who are with the Prophet, and you see the Prophet is so lenient with them that he doesn't want them to be exposed for the crimes they have attempted to do. This is Rasulullah. This is the seerat of the Prophet. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala ali.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Imam Ali was also accused of this, of being, you know, not so crafty, not so cunning, you know, not being a gamer and doesn't know how to play the game, you know, doesn't know how to do politics, you know, these type of things. Imam Ali was accused of that. Here I want to just stop and say something, inshallah, so that we can learn something from here, my friends. The statement I want to make is this. When you deal with Muslims, when you deal with a mu'min, you will see that trickery and cunning and trying to outsmart a Muslim or defraud him, you will see will not bring you any good results. Think about it in your life. In your life, have you ever tried to outsmart a Muslim or a mu'min? Try to take advantage of him. Trying to do something to him, to take something away from him. And see, did you get any profit from it or was it there just loss? This is the reality. You know, trickery and cunning against Muslims and not being transparent and loving and gentle and open with them doesn't get you any positive results. It doesn't get you any results of such type. With believers, if you try to outsmart them, you will only lose. You know, obviously, you know, I mean, Allah is protecting them. Right? A mu'min trying to outsmart another mu'min and trying to take something from him, defraud him, trying to take advantage of him, this doesn't work. Yes, a mu'min, it is in hadith that al-mu'min qayyis. A mu'min is smart. He's very smart, street smart and cunning. But that street smart and cunning is in different situations, not applied to when you deal with a mu'min, with a Muslim. Not when in dealing with a Muslim. He is smart, but that smartness is used somewhere else. His protection is not from his smartness. It is from the protection that Allah affords him. That tawfiq is different. There's a different tawfiq that when you deal with a Muslim, that when you are trying to interact with a Muslim and you see that you want to outsmart him, you will see you will only lose. You will only use. But, you know, you say, you know, but, you know, you hear these things from people. But Maulana, you know, you see that if we don't try to protect ourselves, if we don't play smart, they'll take advantage of us. These Muslims, you don't know them nowadays. These Muslims, you don't know them nowadays. No, we know them very well. They're the same as the time of the Prophet. The same as the time of the Prophet. They took advantage of the Prophet. They took advantage of Imam Ali. Right? They took advantage. Who are you? They shouldn't take advantage of you. Who are you? Why is your interaction different with them? No, we can't be like that, you know, I mean, these people, you know, they'll take, you know, they'll trick us and defraud us and this and that. My friends, listen, what did Rasulullah went through at the hands of these people? Because of the same leniency he afforded to them. Because of the leniency he gave them. Because of this attitude he had with them. That's why it was. Imam Ali was kept aside for how many years? What kind of people did they have around them? You know, I mean, and remember, you know, I mean, when the Islamic Revolution happened, right? And we saw the pictures, you know, of the early revolution, this and that, are completely different than what you see right now, the people in charge and who are there, this and that. At the early revolution, you saw these pictures, and we used to wonder, I used to wonder especially, you know, that all these people who were with Imam Khomeini were clean shaved, you know, clean shaved, handsome guys, you know. All around Imam Khomeini, this and that. And, you know, when I went to Iran and this and that, I asked him, who are these people around him, this and that? He said, listen, you know, most of them have been executed for crimes and being criminals. So I was like wondering, what kind of people were with Imam Khomeini? I mean, then I understood that, listen, when I looked at the seerat of the Prophet, I said the Prophet had the same seerat. What kind of characters were around the Prophet? What kind of characters were around the Prophet? What kind of jokers were around the Prophet? And the Prophet used to tolerate them. His tolerance level was that he tolerated such people around them. Imam Ali, what kind of people were around Imam Ali? As an example, let me give you an example, right? You can say a person like Ashas ibn Qais. Ashas ibn Qais. Right, let me just briefly tell you his life story. This person worked with Imam Ali. He was in the army of Imam Ali. He was his advisor. He was one of the commanders in his army. This is a person who worked with Imam Ali. Then after that, he joined the Khawarij against Imam Ali. Right? He joined the Khawarij against Imam Ali. After the Khawarij, he joined Imam Hassan and became a part of his forces. Imam Hassan. Then after that, he became one of the people who wrote the letters from Kufa to Imam Hussein to come to Kufa. Right? He wrote a letter to Imam Hussein. He says he's one of the inviters of Imam Hussein to Kufa. And then after inviting him, he became and he joined the forces of Umar ibn Sa'd in killing Imam Hussein. This is He joined forces with Umar ibn Sa'd to kill Imam Hussein. And after Imam Hussein died, he joined forces with Mukhtar to take the revenge of Imam Hussein. This is Ashas ibn Qais, right? He joined forces with Mukhtar to take revenge of Imam Hussein, and then he joined forces with those who were against Mukhtar to kill Mukhtar. And at the end, he died a peaceful death in his bed. A natural death in his bed. I mean, just imagine the jokers and characters and animals that are around Imam Ali. And Imam Ali is tolerating them. Right? I mean, if he wasn't lenient, if he wasn't forgiving, if he wasn't hopeful, if he did not have husn-e zan, if he did not have a positive thinking, would he allow such characters to be in his army, to be around him? Don't you think that Imam Ali was smart enough to know who's good and bad? Someone who has ilmul ghaib, someone who said, who has announced that he can answer any question under the sky, that you can pose any question to him, whether it's from dunya or akhirat, he can answer to you. Don't you know that what this person is going to end up, doesn't he know that? My friends, this is that seerah, this is that leniency. They were lenient like that when they interacted with Muslims. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. They accused Imam Ali that he wasn't fast. He should have ran for the government. When others were running for it and when others were trying to vie for it, he should have, also vied for the government. Why didn't he run when the others ran? I mean, he could have gotten something also. Right? He could have gotten something also. Well, here's the thing, man. Just an example I will give briefly. We have a lot to discuss, just an example I will give briefly. Today's a weekend, so I'm going to stretch this for about 10-15 minutes more. Right? Send aloud salawats.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad.
Let me example. I think, once I gave this example a long time ago, I don't know if you remember it. Let's say you invited me in the month of Ramadan for iftar. I come to iftar so that I can right with you. I come a little bit early, there's about 2 hours remaining, and you already have the iftar spread out on the table. All kinds of food, different varieties of food, and they all look delicious. He said, Maulana, you're early. I said, come on, Bismillah, befarmai, tafaddal, you know. I said, I can't wait for iftar. So I said, you know, there's 2 hours left, so let me go, you know, rest inshallah, and then inshallah, you know. Or Maulana, if you want to rest, go upstairs and rest. So I go upstairs and rest, and your other friends come. And this gang of friends, when they come, they look at the food, and it's too delicious for them to wait, so they start eating. They start eating and this and that, and when the time for azan comes, and I come downstairs, I see the food is gone. And so now, I say, where's the food? He says, Maulana, you should have come down earlier. When everyone was eating, you should have come down at that time, you would have got some also. He said, but wait a minute, I couldn't come down at that time. What was stopping you from coming down? There's something called Shariat. There's something that is called values. There's something that is called Islamic law that was preventing me for doing that. You see, if you ask Imam Ali, why didn't you come when everyone came and were trying to grab power? Imam Ali said that it was Rasulullah's dead body on the ground. His respect, his honor, my values, Islamic values that were preventing me. That's why I didn't come down. That's why I wasn't there to get it. What do you think? If I broke Islam, yes, I would get it. The issue for us is now this, my friends. The question is this. Is our job defending our values or defending our power? Again, understand this. This is very important. What are we here for? Are we here to defend our values or are we here to defend government and power? That I want my government, I want my seat, I want my position on the BOD. And then at the end what happens? At the expense of what? At the expense of values? At the expense of your deen? At the expense of your Shariat? Is this what? My friends, this is what the Imams were about. They were about values. They were about Shariat. They were about right and wrong. They were not about power. They're not. That's why they did not go there. That's why you see they were so lenient. They didn't care about this power. And that's why the people thought they were naive. Oh, they're naive. And they're like this. In the seerah of the Prophet, you don't see politics, dirty politics. You know, and planning and cunning and this and that. And this game playing and trying to put down others, trying to defraud others. You don't see that. When? This is important now. Huh. When he interacted with Muslims. When he interacted with believers. Even when he interacted with those munafiq who haven't been exposed yet. If you haven't been exposed yet, we'll still regard you as a Muslim. We can have a hunch that you're going the wrong direction. We can have a doubt where you're going. But we will still regard you as a Muslim and deal with you as a Muslim and be gentle and lenient with you. This is the seerah of the Prophet. As long as he's dealing with believers and Muslims, he was lenient. Not when he was dealing with kuffar. Not when he was dealing with enemies. Not when he was dealing with zalimeen. When he dealt with zalimeen, yes. Then you see how cunning Rasulullah was. Then you see what a strategist Rasulullah was. Then you see how he made them run around his fingers and pull wool over their eyes and make them run for their money. Now you see how Rasulullah was in dealing with kuffar. When he dealt with kuffar, it was a whole different ballgame. It was nothing like, for example, you know, you can easily take care of him and that's it. No, when he dealt with kuffar, he was very cunning. When he dealt with enemies, he was very cunning. He played that way. I gave you examples of his leniency. Let me give you an example of his being cunning and being smart and being playing smart when it comes to enemies. Many examples we have of how many meetings he had with kuffar and how he fooled them in those meetings. And these people went back not knowing what he's talking about. Completely baffled. not knowing what to do. Yeah, an example of that is what? The eve of the conquest of Makkah. The eve of the conquest of Makkah was what? When the army of Muslims, they came there, they weren't a huge amount. But Rasulullah said, listen, light campfires everywhere. So these Muslims lit campfires all over the land. So when the kuffar scouts came to see, they saw so many campfires that they went back and said, listen, there's no use fighting. If they had known the actual number of Muslims, there might have been a fight for Makkah. But in order to win Makkah without bloodshed, he conned them by making so many campfires and making them think that the Muslim army is so large that it was useless to fight them, so they gave up without a fight. I mean, Rasulullah, he played these tricks with non-Muslims, with kuffar, in such a way that they couldn't even think that far. My friends, mu'min follows the seerat of Rasulullah. That's why you see a mu'min and a mu'min country and a mu'min nation, it doesn't win with its arms and ammunition, it wins with its cunning and smartness, that they're always two steps ahead of the game. This is what makes us strong. This is the seerat of the Prophet. This is what he was about. So be so smart that they won't even know what coming. That's the tawfiq comes from Allah. That's a different thing.
Takbir.
Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Khalid Akbar.
My friends, when we look at Imam Hussein, he said that I will do the same thing that the Prophet did. Seerat of the what? Gentleness and leniency. I will be lenient. I will be gentle. I will be kind. This is what I am about. And what it means is the fact that I will not play games with people. I will not mislead them. I will not tell lies to them. I will not say half-truths to them. I will not lure them. I will not bring them to something that they aren't expecting. I'm not going to give them a dream that they will follow without having the right concept behind it. I will not do that. And this is why you see Imam Hussein, when you looked at Imam Hussein, when you see him on the night of Ashura speaking to his companions, what is he doing? He is giving them every logical, reasonable proofs of why they should go away. Why they should leave him. What is Imam Hussein saying? Listen, these people, I mean, they're here to kill me. They're here to kill me. They want my blood. They want to shed my blood. So, it's not your war. So, you know, I lift my bayat from you. Go on. Go away from here. I mean, he's giving them all the proofs, right? All the proofs, go away from here. So now what happened is that he's giving them all the proofs for them to go. This is Imam Hussein's seerat. Now when you look at the seerat of these other people, for example, Abdullah ibn Zubair, when he was surrounded in Makkah and his life was in danger, he was cursing his own people. How dare you leave me, you? And, you know, he used some choice words to curse his people, right? How dare you leave me? And how dare you leave me, you know, and my life in danger? This and that, he's cursing his people. He's trying to make his people stay. Imam Hussein is trying to make his people leave. See the difference? This is the seerat, he's saying. This is the seerat of Rasulullah. Obviously here, just want to say one or two more things, inshallah, we'll go from there. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
So now, in order to conclude this, right, two things I will say. First thing, my friends, the seerat of the Prophet. When we speak about the seerat of the Prophet, it is mostly leniency and compassion, sometimes harshness and strictness. Yes, he is strict and harsh sometimes, but he's compassionate most of the times. If you say that, you know, Rasulullah's seeriyat and his way of life is that he's angry sometimes and he's lenient sometimes, this is wrong. This is zulm on Rasulullah. No, he is lenient most of the times. Sometimes he is strict. Sometimes we saw him strict. We saw him when he was in anger. What are those things where he became angry? And what are those things that where he was lenient is what we want to understand in a seerat. Right? That's what we want to understand in a seerat. Because when he did become angry, it would show on his face. He would turn red in anger. And he would be so angry that you can't appease him. No, you can't go and tell him that, hey, Rasulullah, have a drink of water, you know, calm down. Because Rasulullah did not get angry ever in his whole life. We never have an example where he ever got angry on personal issues. Never in his life did he get angry on personal issues or a personal agenda or someone that did something to him. Never in his life did he get angry. We never have an example. You cannot even find a faulty book somewhere written by some half-baked Oriental trying to deface the Prophet who could find something to write something like that. Never did he get angry on anything that is personal. What did he get angry on? Inshallah, I'll go into details, but just to tell you, he would get angry, let's say, on the rights of others being taken away from them. When people trample the rights of others, then he would get angry. He would get angry at the respect and honor of Islamic law and the defacement and the ridicule of what is held sacred in Islam. He would be angry at that. There's no doubt about it. He would be angry at that. Nothing could calm him down at that time. Because his anger was not like, you know, for example, whenever a Muslim gets angry, right, when any one of you get angry, we say, brother, calm down, it's all right, here, have some water, you know, have a seat, this and that. You can't tell that to the Prophet. Because none of that would work on the Prophet. Because his anger is not without justification. Our anger is, you know, well, like without any justification. Hey, you said that about my mother? Let me tell you. Right? This is our anger. This is how we get angry. Right? But when Rasulullah or Imam Ali, they don't get angry for these things at all. That's why, you know, to appease them, the only way that you can appease them, the only way that you can calm him down is to say, Ya Rasulullah, the right that has been taken, I'm returning that right. Then Rasulullah would get calm. Until that right is not given back to its rightful owner, I will not be calm. I will be angry. You see, this is that strictness he had. But in fact, you will not be able to make him angry. Calm. Nothing will make him calm. Now you're like, wow, subhanallah. Now, is it easy to live with Rasulullah? Imagine this. Is it easy to live with him now? If he sees someone's right is being taken away, he will not be calm. He will be angry until that right is given back. So now, if you are with him, you will have to work with him to give that right back. You know, we ignore the right, you know. Astaghfirullah, this brother shouldn't have done it. Let's have a meal. Let's have some ice cream. Calm down. Right? This is what we do. Brothers, this is why. Understand this. Imam Ali, when he wanted to get angry, and Abdullah ibn Abbas logically was right. He was right. Ali, 25 years, you did not care about power, and here you are trying to fight Muawiyah, who's just taking one province away from you. He's just taking one province away from you. That's it. And you want to fight him, but for 25 years, you did not care about power. Imagine this. And this is where I want you to come. I hope you are here with me. You know what I want you to understand? Is this, my friends. There are two places where the masoom whether it is the Prophet or the Imams, there are two places where they have never been understood. They have never been understood in these two places, even by their closest companions. They haven't been understood in these two places. One is in their leniency and forgiveness. Two is in their harshness and strictness. You see this? This is a place where the Imams are left alone. No Shias are there to understand what the Imams are going through. Shias have never understood this. Where, when the Imams are either lenient and they're showing their leniency, and like everyone is complaining, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Imam Ali, when he made a treaty with Muawiyah, Malik Ashtar is doubting him. Malik is saying, Mawla, why are you doing this treaty? I cannot understand this. Malik Ashtar is the closest companion that he has. So in the time of leniency, you don't understand him. And when they're making a stand, you don't understand him. Imam Hassan wasn't understood when he was making a treaty. Imam Hussein wasn't understood when we were saying, Hayat min Nazillah. You see this? And these are the two places we need to understand in the seerah of the Prophet, in the Imams. Right? These are the two places we need to understand, my friends. Where, in conclusion, that's what I'm saying. Because this is what it's about. Why are we learning the seerah of the Prophet and the Imams? To learn this. You who want to be with the Imam, if you don't, that's a whole different story. But for those who do want to be with the Imam, who do want to die with Imam Hussein, who do want to be with Imam Zaman, they need to know these two places. Because these are very delicate and these are very subtle places to understand. Where is the Imam so lenient that you can't understand what he's doing? And where is the Imam so strict and severe that we don't understand what he's doing? This is where we need to understand, on what basis do they do it? On what reason do they do it? So that we understand those reasoning, we understand that stance that they take, so then we can say that yes, this is the reason Imam is going to make a stand on this. I have to be with him. I have to be with him. My friends, when Imam Hussein showed his leniency, he was so lenient that he was even forgiving. He was giving the chance of forgiveness. Look in Karbala. Look on the day of Ashura. You know, Imam Hussein, you know, he was bloodied. By the blood of his companions and by the blood of his children. He was bloodied. Just a few moments ago, Ali Akbar had died in his arms. It wasn't easy for Imam Hussein. It's not easy. Just a few moments ago, Ali Asghar was shot at and was killed in his arms. Just a few moments ago, his back was broken when he saw Abbas. Just a few moments ago, his family, the lamps of his household, were taken away mercilessly. Just a few moments ago. And now the leniency of Hussein is that Hussein comes to this army of demons, this army of merciless, cruel animals. He comes in front of them and he tells them, listen, there's still chance for you to be saved. Let me go. There's still chance for you to be saved. Hussein, what kind of leniency is this? What kind of forgiveness is this? Don't you know that Ali Akbar's blood is on their hands? Don't you know that Ali Asghar's blood is on their hands? Hussein, make us understand what kind of forgiveness this is. Hussein, we want to stand with you. How can we know if you don't tell us? How do you make a stand like this? How can you forgive people like this? My friends, this is where it needs to be understood. This is the seerah that needs to be understood. Can we stand with Hussein at this time? Can you stand with Hussein at that time? You know, when he makes a stand, can you understand the stubbornness of that stand? Not because I'm stubborn, because it is the truth. It is what is right. And I will not leave this right. I will not leave the truth no matter what happens. Can you understand that much? No, in order to understand, you truly have to be free. You have to be free. You cannot be a slave. You cannot be a slave to understand this. A slave cannot understand what freedom is. Only a free man can understand what freedom is. That's why Hur understood that. You know, Hur understood this, you know. Hur understood where Hussein was lenient, he saw it with his own eyes, right? And Hur understood where Hussein can be hard. He heard it and he witnessed it with his own eyes. When Imam Hussein was lenient, Imam Hussein met Hur in a situation where Hur was trying to block him. When he came to Imam Hussein's army, when he came there to Imam Hussein's army, Hur's army was out of water. And they were so thirsty that they could not find water where they were at. So they were just trying to look for water more than they were looking for Imam Hussein. And in that situation, they bumped into Imam Hussein's army. When they came to Imam Hussein saw them, and he saw 1,000 soldiers. Imam Hussein had a handful of people with him. Imam Hussein had a handful of people with him. 1,000 soldiers came there, thirsty, dying from thirst. Quenching, they didn't know. They were so thirsty. Imam Hussein saw that and said, Abbas, go and quench the thirst of our guest. Quench the thirst of our guest. Hur drank the water of Imam Hussein. My friends, you know, back home in the Shia world, you know, for Imam Hussein, we make a sabil of water. And people give water in the name of Imam Hussein, right? And people drink this water for tabarruk, so that they can be blessed, that some guidance can come in their heart, that their heart can be inclined towards Imam Hussein, that they can, you know, fall in love, more in love with Imam Hussein. Hussein, I'm drinking the water in your name, Hussein. Bless me. Allah, bless me because I've drank the water in the name of Hussein. You know, when Hussein himself is making a sabil and giving that water to you, when Hussein himself is offering that water to you, imagine what kind of blessing would that be? Hur did not come as a friend. He came as an enemy. He came to stop Imam Hussein, to block him, to follow the orders of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. He came to do the orders of Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad. He came forward, he saw the gentleness and the kindness of Hussein. He saw the gentleness and the kindness of Hussein. The love that Hussein gave. You know, it is said that when Imam Hussein gave water to them, he told Abbas that, Abbas, give them so much water that they don't feel thirsty anymore. That they should not feel thirsty. They should be satisfied. Make them satisfied, Abbas. Make them satisfied. Abbas said to everyone, give them water. He made all of Bani Hashim work. He says, give them water. And everyone was serving them water. Everyone was serving them drinks. He said, take this. And they were serving them. Hussein didn't care. He did not care if we run out of water. Hussein did not care if we run out of water. He said, don't worry. This is the way we are. The seerah that we follow is the seerah of the Prophet and my father, right? I will give everything away. And he gave so much away. You know, it is said that the soldiers were so thirsty and they were so parched in their thirst that one of them said that I was so thirsty that as they gave me water in a cup, in my haste to drink it, I brought it close to my mouth, but I opened my mouth, I spilled the water on the ground before it could fall in my mouth because I was so thirsty, I just want to drink it fast. And it fell on the ground and I looked at the water and you know what? I mean, I was so sad. I knew I would get more water. I knew I would get more water. But to see the water that is so necessary for me fall on the ground, it messed up my mind. I'm just looking at it. What happened? I felt sad that this water fell on the ground. I felt sad. It fell on the ground. I was waiting. Now I needed some more water. And then I saw in the far distance that where Hussein was sitting. I knew Hussein was sitting and watching us being fed with this water. I saw towards his position and I saw him looking into my eyes. I saw him looking into my eyes. And then the Imam himself stood up. And he came forward in a hurry. He came forward in a hurry. And he grabbed from me my cup and took the water himself with such eagerness, with such compassion, as if something is important for him. Me, I'm a nobody. I'm not whore, I'm a nobody, I'm just a soldier and whore's on me. But Hussein is so eager to feed me. Is so eager to quench my thirst. So eager to quench my thirst. Can you believe that? When Imam Hussein took that water, he says, come close to me. He put the cup in my mouth. He says, relax. His hand that was touching me relaxed me. And then like a caring father, he made me drink that water. Imam, so much love, so much gentleness. This is, my friend, this is the seerat, right? This is the seerat when he's lenient. Now the same whore, when Imam Hussein said, "Hur, let me go," whore said, "I cannot let you go. I can't let you go." Imam Hussein, when he saw that, you know, he was being stopped and that he was under the control of someone else, this was something that he cannot tolerate. That Allah has given me the right over this earth. I can make the earth move from left to right. Allah has given me that authority. Hur, how dare you stop me? May your mother cry over your debts. Hur, when he heard these words from Hussein, now he saw the harshness of Hussein. How strict Hussein is. That Hussein will not come under anyone, no matter what happens. He will not come under anyone's authority. When he heard this from Hussein, you know, Hur, maybe this was Imam Hussein's way of bringing something out of Hur. He says, Hur, think about it. I am talking about your mother. Hur was one step close to saying something. Then he stopped. Something came over his mind. Something came over his mind. He said, Hussein, you can speak about my mother. Hussein, I cannot speak about your mother. I cannot speak about your mother, Hussein. Hussein, her love has been made incumbent upon us. Hussein, her respect and honor is on her head and is cherished by us. It is what makes us a mu'min. I cannot say anything about Fatima. It is Hussein's way of saying, "Hur, if you understood that, then understand what you're doing with the son of Zahra." May Allah give you ajr. May Allah give you ajr, you know. You know, each of these shaheed that we remember, this is a light. They are a light, a noor that enlightens us, right? They really, you know, whenever we study anyone, whether it's Burair, whether it's Saeed, whether it's Muslim ibn Awsajah, anyone that we try to remember, we see that this is a light for us, and this love that we have for Hussein just increases. It increases for them also. This is what we, you know, when we truly try to understand them, this is something that we get to. And I just pray, you know, let us just make this dua as we are reading this, that Ya Allah, you know, we come to the door of Ahlul Bayt. You have asked us to come towards it. We are here at the door of Ahlul Bayt. This is the house of the Imam. We are sitting in the house of the Imam. We are at the door of Hussein. Allah, we ask you, just like physically we are in the house of the Imam and at the door of Ahlul Bayt, take us spiritually to Imam Hussein and his companions. Take us there, Ya Allah. What they are thinking, let us have those same thoughts. What their likes are, let us have those same likings. What their dislikes are, let us have those same dislikes. Allah, make us such that we can hear the call of Hussein. Allah, make us such that we can say labbaik to Hussein. Allah, make us such that we can have that tawfiq, that we can give our life for Hussein. I know that our life is meaningless. I know my life is useless. But Allah, if we shed it for Hussein, then it will have some meaning. It will have some meaning. It will be regretful, my friends. I'm saying this here in the middle of the masaib. Inshallah, that you understand this better. You know, Imam Hussein invited many people to come. Imam Hussein invited many people to come. And you know what? They didn't respond to him. They rejected him. A person like that was Ubaidullah ibn Hur al-Jawfi. This person, Imam Hussein himself went to invite him. People said, he's not going to come to you. Imam Hussein said, no, I want to go to him and invite him to come. Myself, I want to go and come, find him to come. You know, Imam Hussein went there. He personally talked to him. He laid out his plan. He said, I want you to join me. He said all of that. And you know what Ubaidullah said? He said, you know what? I have a very good sword I want to give to you. It's unbreakable. Trust me. Take this. I have a horse that's very good. And I'll give you this sword and this horse as a gift. And use that. Imam Hussein said, you know, I want you to come with me. The sword and the horse I will give you. You come with me. You know, he said, sorry, I can't. You know, Imam Hussein, all right. I mean, he didn't sweat it. He didn't get it. He said, all right, that's it. Let me go. Fine. He just left it. He left and he walked away from there. You know, he walked away from there. After the martyrdom of Hussein, Ubaidullah ibn Hur, obviously he regretted. He saw that this was an opportunity. He saw his life. He says, I'm going to die anyway. I'm going to die anyway. If I had accepted Hussein's offer and died under the umbrella of Hussein, where would I have been? Where would I have been? My friends, take this as an opportunity. Take this as your chance. These 10 days of Muharram, take it as your chance. This is where you want to make your prayers and say, Allah, make me that which can be with Hussein. Don't lose this opportunity. It comes and goes. Then you will be left regretting that I will die anyway. Oh, I wish I died with Hussein. Those who did accept him, those who did go to him, until today, everyone, millions and millions of mu'min and believers whose hearts have been enlightened by the guidance of Allah, are looking at those who died by the side of Hussein and are saying, Bi Abi Antum wa Ummi. May my mother and father be sacrificed for you. Don't be like Ubaidullah ibn Hur and regret that maybe I could have been one of those people. Yes, my friends, when Hur saw the two sides of Hussein, now the only choice for Hur was to see what the right time is. Hur did not know that Hussein was invited by the people of Kufa. And Hur did not know Ubaidullah ibn Ziyad and his intentions. He stuck with them to see there's an amicable ending. But when there was no amicable ending, and it was war, he came to Umar ibn Sa'd and said, Are you really going to fight Hussein? Are you really going to fight this man? He says, I don't have any choice. Is there going to be war? He says, there will be such a war that you will see body parts all over this ground. When Hur heard that their intention is to kill Hussein and to go to war with Hussein, then Hur made his choice. Then Hur made his choice, a choice that made his essence. My friends, our existence comes with our birth, but our essence is made with the choices we make. And this is why you see, Hur was made by the choices he made. Yes, it is a coincidence that his mother named him Hur, because at the time of birth, she named him Hur. But then Hur lived up to his name in Karbala. Hur lived up to his name in Karbala. Now this man who has so many people, who has so much respect, who has so much honor, who is regarded by many as a dream. People dream of becoming Hur. People dream of becoming like Hur. He is the person that people in the world of Islam would say, yes, this is a person you want to become like. That Hur, now he made the choice that, you know what? All of this is nothing in comparison to what is under the umbrella of Hussein. He came that way and he said, I'm going towards Hussein. But now you see, when you come towards Hussein, you saw the physical movement of Hur from one side of the battlefield to the other side of the battlefield. I want you to see the spiritual change of Hur that took place from that side of the battlefield to this side of the battlefield. Hur, when you used to come out of your tents, your chest used to be out. Your head used to be held high. Your nose used to be up. You were proud. You had pride. Now when you're going towards Hussein, now your chest is inside, your head is bowed down, your eyes are lowered. What happened, Hur? Hur will tell you, I have understood what I truly am. I understood what I truly should be like. If I want to be with Haq, if I want to be with truth, I need to be bowed down before it. I need to be bowed down before it. Or when he was coming towards the tent, now you see those people who stood by Yazid and those thousands who were in the army of Yazid had a meaning for Hur when he was there. But now when he came to Hussein and he looked back, these were faceless people. People who had no selves. People who had no meaning. He looked at them and he said, you are worthless now. I have lived all my life thinking what you think of me. Today I understood how useless you are. My friends, this is the growth when you come towards Hussein. This is the growth that happens. Now let me just tell you, my friend, when Hur came closer to the tents of Hussein, he came with a few people. His servant was with him. Hur took out his shoes and tied them and put him on his neck. He put the shoes on his neck. This is a sign of remorse. He said, Hussein, I come in remorse. I'm sorry for what I've done to you. I'm sorry.
I come apologizing. I come asking for forgiveness. This is how I come towards my Imam. Ask him, forgive me for all the shortcomings. Forgive me for all the wrongs. Forgive me for all the bads. I have come to you. Now when he's coming towards Hussein, then he hears the voices of the children saying, Alatash, Alatash, we are dying of thirst. We are dying of thirst. So now when he hears the air, now he takes his hands and starts beating his head. Starts beating his head. He says, what can I do, Mawla? I am responsible for this. I am responsible for this. When he comes closer, his servant says that someone is coming towards us. He said, who is this? It looks like Abul Fazl al-Abbas. The flag bearer, the right hand of Hussein, is coming. Then he knows that Hussein has sent a welcome party for him. He's saying, you shouldn't have done this. I feel embarrassed. I feel embarrassed. I'm melted. I don't know what to say, Hussein. Now, when they come closer, they said, the servant looks at someone who's coming and says, Master, I think Hussein himself is coming. Hussein himself is coming. When Hur hears that, he cannot bear it anymore. He makes himself fall down from the horse. Now he's on his knees and his elbows. Hussein comes towards him to pick him up. Hussein kneels in front of him. Hur bows his head in front of Hussein and says, Mawla, forgive me. Forgive me. I have done wrong to you. Forgive me. Imam Hussein says, Hur, I have forgiven you and Allah has forgiven you, Hur. But then you have come to a very benevolent master. You have come to a very gentle master. Hur, you know this. Now the next thing that Imam Hussein said destroyed Hur from inside and made him complete. Imam Hussein said, Hur, when you came to me the first time, you came as an enemy and I gave you water. Today you come to me as a friend. Hur, I am not in a position to give you water even today, Hur. I am sorry. When Imam Hussein said that, Hur was melted from the inside. He says, don't do this anymore. I can't take this anymore. The only way I can take this is to go and give my life for you. Let me give my life for you. And then when Hur was given them, he was given the permission to go to the battle. It is said he had a son. He sent his son out to the battlefield. His son went out who was young. And Hur's son fought. Hur wanted him to fight for Hussein. He says, son, I always ask you to fight for battle. I want you to taste how does it feel to fight for the truth. When he went inside there and he fought there, and he fell down, he called out to his father. His father went running there. And when Hur reached there, he saw Imam Hussein holding his son in his lap and said, Hur, do not come here. I will take care of him. You won't be able to bear to see your son like this. You cannot see your son like this. Let me take care of him. I will look after him. Hur looked at Hussein and said, might have said, Hussein, you have taken care of my son. But who will be there when Ali Akbar will fall? Who will be there to stop you from seeing what Ali Akbar is going through?
سيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. مات حسين.